चिंतामणि प्रकर सदमसु.
The devotees asked me if I had any difficulty in understanding his accent and the way his pronunciation is going. And I said no. In fact, I made a comment that I could detect a slight Scottish accent in some of the words that he was using. And I didn't know that he was, that, you know, when he was a young boy, he went to Scottish Church's College in Calcutta. Although later on when I was able to get his association while massaging him, and Srila Prabhupada was getting to know me, he was asking questions, where I was coming from. That's the first thing he asked me, was where I was coming from, and I said, Scotland. And then he started to reminisce that when he was being educated, he was educated by, all his teachers were Scottish, and that he learnt, he had to study the Bible, he learnt the catechism, and he asked me if I knew any Scottish lords. And I said, no, I don't personally know any Scottish lords. And he said, I met one, Lord Zetland. He came to our college in Calcutta. And then he asked me if I studied British history, and I said, oh yes, yes, I was. You know, my whole education was in Scotland. So then he asked me a few questions. He asked me, when was the Battle of Trafalgar? And I said, 1805. And then he asked me, when was the Battle of Waterloo? And I said, 1815. And he said, oh, you know British history just like I know British history. So he was kind of testing me. And also he was asking things like, how far was Glasgow from London? And I told him approximately 400 miles. How long did it take to go there by train? I said approximately 8 hours. So when he was relating like that with me, it put me very much at my ease, because I really didn't know how to start up any conversation with Srila Prabhupada when I was in the process of massaging him. And that's the way he won my heart over too, because he was relating to me in a way that I could appreciate, and I could talk with him. It wasn't a philosophical discussion, the first meeting. Although, when I got the opportunity to ask him a question, which was after leaving the airport and arriving at John Lennon's estate, Prabhupada gave a kirtan in a very philosophical class. But my single most, uppermost desire at that time was to ask when I could get initiation, because that's all I was thinking about. So at the end of class, and Prabhupada asked for questions, I stuck up my hand and he said, yes. And I said, when can I take initiation? Nothing to do with the class. I mean, it was nothing to do with the class, but Srila Prabhupada said, that is another thing. That we will see. But it was about a week later that Prabhupada actually got around to performing initiation.
Well, I remember when I was asked to put the garland on Prabhupada. And I always remember that when Prabhupada came through the doors of the lounge, it was that his smile was like, as I say, oceanic. It was just an oceanic smile. And I could just, straight away, I actually froze, but I remember actually thinking that this person's not in this dimension. You know, even as I was only young then, I was only just turned 18, but I could tell this person's not in this world, he's not on this planet. And I froze, I couldn't put the garland on Prabhupada. So I was just standing there looking at him, and Prabhupada, of course, was just beaming, and I wasn't the only garland, but devotees were coming up to him, but I just froze. I didn't pay my obeisance to anything, I just froze. And Prabhupada walked straight past me, and I'm standing there with this big garland. And I'm just looking at this person. Then I ran up to Prabhupada and slipped the garland on him. But it was kind of funny, because I was obviously the reception committee with the garland, but I actually just froze. I didn't know what to do, you know. And I remember that, you know, particularly Prabhupada's smile just knocked me out. And I remember one thing was that all the devotees were crying practically. that's the fascinating thing about it. I looked around, and there was a lot of devotees there, and a lot of people were crying. And I think that just that's just made me even more kind of amazed at the potency of this person. You know, that someone could walk through a door and cause everyone to cry. You know, it was just fascinating.
I was very struck by the seriousness of Srila Prabhupada there in, on the poster that was, there was a poster of Prabhupada in the temple in Manchester, a black and white poster, picture of Prabhupada sitting on his bed in Berry Place, taken by Gurudas. But I used to think, why does he look so serious? Why isn't he laughing like the other gurus do? And then it suddenly hit me that life itself is so serious. And Prabhupada's gravity and the depth of his compassion came across from his picture.
When he was once, this was a time before he was at the manor, he was leaving to go to the airport and I was sitting in a van waiting to follow him. So I was sitting on the right, in the driver's seat, like this, pronounced, and he came past very, very slowly in the car on my right, lower, and he was on my side of the of his car. So he went past and he looked up at me, like that, and returned my gesture, like this, which I was astounded by. And then our eyes met. And the car was moving very, very slowly still, but our eyes were actually in contact for about, probably about two seconds. And that's probably the most memorable experience of my life, that glance that I got. Because it seemed as if time stopped. And what I felt was that Prabhupada saw thousands of births. He looked like just looked right. It was a timeless experience, and it was like in another dimension. And it felt as if he'd seen thousands of births of nonsense. And not only seeing, but I felt complete acceptance of me with all that nonsense. And then he was gone. But that created a, you know, an incredible link between me and Prabhupada, which I've never forgotten. I cannot forget it.
Whenever there were large morning walks, I got to go anyway in the van, but this one particular morning stands out in my mind very strongly, because I think it's probably the first time I ever spoke to His Divine Grace. I was very nervous of Srila Prabhupada as a young devotee, and I thought only Americans could speak to him. You know, at that time, it was all the American devotees were interacting. And we were all younger devotees, the Welsh and English devotees, and felt somewhat more intimidated. So I was afraid to speak to Prabhupada. And I also thought, well, what's there to say? He's speaking, I'm just listening, basically. But on this one particular morning, I felt he said something, and I felt inclined to ask my first question from Srila Prabhupada. And it was in relation to him walking through St. James's Park. There's some nice photographs in black and white that I see sometimes. Ribet Nandan, Swami, myself, Prabhupada, and I think the driver, one of the devotees, there's just three or four of us walking. And there were some young hippies sleeping on the park benches in their sleeping bags. And as Prabhupada walked past them, he commented, by good fortune, these can all come to Krishna consciousness. And he carried on walking, and just this word good fortune kept going around in my mind. Does this mean that there's some kind of luck involved here, that somebody gets Krishna consciousness, somebody else doesn't, by some throw of the dice? And in my neophyte stage, I was trying to understand what did Prabhupada mean by good fortune specifically. So after a few hundred yards, I plucked up the courage and tried to phrase my question in such a way that wasn't offensive, and very nervously asked, Srila Prabhupada, when you say by good fortune, can you explain that, please? Because I understand from reading your literature and hearing you speak that nothing happens by chance. That was my angle. So by good fortune, what do you mean? So he continued to walk for a little bit, and all of a sudden he stopped dead in his tracks. And frightened me actually, because he turned straight into my face with about a few inches apart, maybe 12 inches on there, and with his walking stick hand, he picked up his walking stick and he pointed right in my face and he said, "We are their good fortune." So I understood from that I had to preach in the future. So, and I've meditated on that for years and years and years, but actually, you know, Prabhupada, in his humility, never said, "I am their good fortune," but "We are their good fortune." So I began to pick up the understanding more deeply about the importance of spreading Krishna consciousness.
I'd come back from India as a hippie in the early 70s, actually 69, about 1970. And funnily enough, I was attempting to write a book then based on the experiences I'd had with the hallucinogenic drugs in India. It was called Ahead of His Time, Self-Realized States Through the Use of Lysergic Acid in India. So at that time, the devotees had just had a big hit in the charts with the record of the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. And so I thought what a great idea it would be to have a chapter featuring an interview with the devotees to get their angle on the absolute truth, as it were. So when I finally find out the location of the temple, I went along there and I met Kulushekhar Prabhu, who was an early disciple. And I made known my intentions, and he said, "Well, our spiritual master is upstairs. Why don't you talk to him?" I said, "Great, why not?" So then we went upstairs. Prabhupada's room was on the first floor in Berry Place. And so before we just entered the room, he said to me, of course, he told me Prabhupada, you know, he's a great personality and we offer respects and what have you. So if you do a little pranams and what have you, as you go in, out of respect. I said, "For sure, fair enough." And having been in India, you know, I'd seen all the sadhu babas and what have you, you know, doing dandavats and what have you. So anyway, on entering the room, Prabhupada was sitting the other side of the room with his back to the window behind a low desk on a cushion, as we came to know, you know, that's how he would sit. And he was writing something, and he peered over at me. He had his glasses down his nose and said, "Hare Krishna." And somehow I just felt so overwhelmed to be in his presence that I just automatically fell to the floor like a stick, as I'd seen devotees do in the temple just downstairs. And then I just simply lay there and froze, and I was thinking, well, what do I do now? When do I get up? And So a few moments passed, and then Kulushekhar kind of nudged me. He said, "Okay, you can get up now." Yeah. So then, I'd had all these preconceived questions I was going to ask, because at that time you must understand that LSD was my god. You know, I'd interviewed prior to that an associate of Timothy Leary, so I was very much into glorifying the use of LSD for achieving self-realization. So when I sat there and I was facing Srila Prabhupada directly, I went blank. I was just, as I say, overwhelmed. I was speechless. Somehow or other, I'd just gotten a book called The Nectar of Devotion. And I remember reading in that how the pure devotee's eyes were anointed with the pulp of love, the salver of... and looking at Prabhupada's eyes, I could see this. And I could see he was like unlike anyone I'd ever seen in my life. And as I say, I was speechless. So after we had exchanged pleasantries, some moments passed, and then Prabhupada began talking, saying how unfortunate it was that the youth of today were trying to become self-realized through the use of hallucinogenic drugs. And I was just totally taken aback. I couldn't believe it, because this is exactly what I was going to challenge Prabhupada on. So I was just blown away at that point, and all my thoughts of writing a book went out the window. So then after that, kind of Prabhupada broke the ice a bit by talking and saying something that went straight, you know, I could see that he could see actually what I was thinking. So then I plucked up some courage and I began to ask a question. And I think the first question I asked the Prabhupada was, what are the characteristics of a pure devotee? And Prabhupada expounded for about 20 minutes just on that question alone. And I can't remember too much more about the interview. I think I was with Prabhupada for about a full hour. And there was Kulashekhar was the only other devotee in the room at the time. But I remember Prabhupada's closing statement. And he looked at me straight in the eyes and he said, "Man is the architecture of his own fortune. So you make your fortune now. Whatever is done is done. Now start a new chapter in your life, and in the next life go back home, back to Godhead." And those words are still ringing in my ears to this day.
He said, "So you know what the four principles are?" And I explained, "Yes." And you're chanting minimum 16 rounds, and I said, "Yes." So on that premise, he accepted me. And then when he gave me my name, he said, "Your name from now on is Dhananjaya Das." He said, "This is the name for Arjuna." He said, "Dhananjaya means conqueror of wealth." He said, "You will have no difficulty in acquiring wealth." He said, "Actually, there's so much wealth," and he put his hands up in there and said, "There's so much wealth everywhere." He said, "Money is flying in all directions." He said, "We simply have to learn the art of catching it." That's what he told me.
And another time we were doing initiations, and at the initiations, Prabhupada was very grave. You know, when he was chanting on the beads, he was chanting on all these beads, and he was very, very grave. And I remember sitting, I was sitting just below the Vyasasan. I was thinking, Prabhupada's so grave, you know. And yet then when one boy came up, Prabhupada was holding up the beads like that. And so Prabhupada said to him, he said, "So what are the four regulative principles?" So the boy said, "No intoxication, no gambling, no media, no illicit, no illicit sex." And then Prabhupada said, "So which one you like the best?" And the boy went bright red, you know. He went completely red. And I just thought that was really funny because Prabhupada had been so grave. It was so serious an occasion, and yet he kind of completely talked like that.
He asked me what the four principles were, and he said, "Do you vow to chant 16 rounds a day?" And I remember saying, "Yes, Prabhu." I didn't address Prabhupada as Prabhupada. With all sincerity, I said, "Yes, Prabhu. Prabhupada's I think Prabhupada saw past the lack of etiquette. He could see perhaps a little sincerity there. I was being very serious when I said it. Looking back, he should have chastised me very seriously, but it wasn't.
We were talking with Srila Prabhupada, and Ribhata Nandan was remembering that he'd worked in a... Prabhupada was talking about Ugra Karma and how people work so hard and they get no result for it, etc., etc., and how difficult it is for them. So Ribhata Nandan Swami began to speak about how he used to work in a canning factory in California before he was a devotee for some period of time. And he began to describe in detail, some detail at least, what it was like to work in this hellish factory. So I'd been around a couple of years now, I was a bit more confident, so I felt, even though a little shy and nervous, I still thought, well, I have a little something to say here. And I began to talk to Prabhupada about how I worked in a steel factory for a few weeks or a month or so when I was about 19, 20, a year or so before I met Srila Prabhupada. And I began to describe it in some detail, how there was this huge press. And there were two people working on this press, and our only job was to lift up the metal guard of the press and take one huge sheet of steel and put it into the press and pull down the guard and press the button, and this big press would come down and make this piece of steel into a shape of a bath. And then we'd walk around the other side of the press, huge hydraulic press, and lift up the guard and take out the bath and throw it onto a conveyor belt and pull down the guard and walk around the other side and lift up the guard and put in the steel and pull down the guard and press the button, and the press would come down and go around the other. So I was speaking, and Prabhupada was listening and watching and smiling. Not smiling, but listening carefully. And I said that then I was doing quite well, Prabhupada. They invited me to work night shift. You got extra money on night shift. So that's what I thought, that I was such a good worker. Actually, it was nobody wanted to do it. But there was a little extra pay, so I thought I'd try. And I found after 1 or 2 weeks that I nearly had a nervous breakdown. I was actually sleeping, working all night. I couldn't sleep during the day. And because I was such a sense gratifier, I would always go out in the night with my friends. So then I'd go from there to work. So after a couple of weeks of this, I almost had a nervous breakdown from the strain. And Prabhupada listened, and then he was thinking, and he said, actually, that's because in your last life you were all Brahmins. And everyone's sort of looking. There are about 10 people in the room. And he said, actually, otherwise, how could you so quickly come to the platform of Krishna consciousness? And then he stopped and he thought for a little longer. He was leaning on his cushions. He was very relaxed mood, leaning back on his cushions with this table. I think it was this same table in front of him at the time. And he was relaxed. He was leaning back and thinking. And then he said, actually, my Guru Maharaj has ordered you all to take birth to help me spread this mission. And so everyone's ears are popping up. And then he looked around across everyone in the room. And he finished. I was sitting here with Ribhatnandan. And he looked across everyone. And he finished on me because I was the last one to speak to him. And he said, and now we are all together again. And as he said that, he just beamed. And he had his hand behind his head as he does, you know, Prabhupada. And now we are all together again. And he beamed, and everyone just went, Jai, Prabhupada. And some devotees began to cry.
Well, see, Shyamasundar was very eager to have this very place transformed into a proper temple. And so the building became like a construction site. And he mentioned to George it was very difficult for us to live there because there was so much dust, and there was so much noise because he had to put in reinforced metal beams and all kinds of work had to be done there. And he said it was very difficult for the devotees to live in that building while that construction work was going on. And could he help us in any way? And he said, well, I'll speak to John Lennon because he's just acquired a big property and he might be able to put you up. Because at that time, George was living in Esher, in Surrey. And he didn't have a big house, but he knew that John's house was much bigger. He hadn't moved into Friar Park in Henley. Otherwise, I'm sure he would have invited us to stay with him. But it was just due to the circumstances. So John agreed. He thought it was a really good idea. In fact, he was incredibly favorable. He offered us 5 acres of land. So this particular estate had 76 acres, and he wasn't into farming or agriculture or anything like that. And he said that we could have 5 acres of land. When Prabhupada was told us, Srila Prabhupada said that we should utilize this land for growing all our fresh vegetables and fruits. And he said that anything that was left over that we couldn't use for ourselves, for our own consumption, we should take into the local market in London. And he said we should take it in by a bullock cart. And when Prabhupada said this, I said, but Prabhupada, there's so many lorries going in, because at that time, of course, Covent Garden was very close to where Bury Place was in Bloomsbury. Covent Garden was just down, it's still, of course, there, near where the Opera House is, and Bow Street Magistrates Court. And so I said, but the lorries will get there before the bullock cart. And because we were 25 miles, at least 25, if not more, miles outside of, you know, London. And Prabhupada said, no. He said, the bullock cart should leave the night before. And they will walk all night, and they will reach the market garden before the lorries arrive. So in 1969, this was Prabhupada's vision. He wanted us to train up animals, hitch them to a cart, and take fresh market produce into central London. He also said that we should hold a big Ratha Yatra festival, starting from John Lennon's estate, and go in procession all the way into central London, stopping at different little towns and villages on the way.
In St. James's Park, Prabhupada would constantly be pointing out things, different things. I mean, there was one time we were in a park, and there was that now there was that story, which I remember, but there was some bird droppings, you know, and Prabhupada was asking, he was saying, what is this? And everyone was kind of looking at the bird droppings and thinking, whoa, you know, like, they were kind of thinking, well, maybe Prabhupada means some tea leaf formations, you know, like we could esoterically look at it. And Prabhupada said, what does this tell you? And everyone was kind of bewildered. And then Prabhupada said, this tells you that the same bird is sleeping on the same branch every night. So Prabhupada said, even the bird becomes attached to his apartment. So he said, Prabhupada said, so be careful.
In the beginning, John was much more interested than Yoko. In fact, one evening, John and Yoko invited Prabhupada over to listen to a song that he had just recorded. This is just after his 29th birthday. And he made a song called Cold Turkey. And of course, the significance of that song was that he was actually having withdrawal symptoms coming off heroin, because, and I saw this myself, he was, himself and his wife were shooting up heroin constantly while we were there. And that's why Yoko Ono had so many miscarriages, because she was also really anxious to have a child by John Lennon. And I had to clean up an office one time in the main house, and when I moved a filing cabinet, I came across all these, you know, hypodermic needles and syringes were just lying around. Also, they had some very unsavory characters living at their place. They had someone called Alexander Trockey, and he is a Scotsman, but he had moved to New York and he'd written a book about his visions on heroin. And also William Burroughs was invited, and William Burroughs wrote a book called The Soft Machine. He was living in North Africa. So they were really dabbling a lot in that drug culture, looking for identity or something. They were looking for something. And that's why we were there too. And, of course, they had made a record called John and Yoko Forever, because Yoko's whole consciousness was fixed that she wanted some or another to live with John forever, for eternity. And, of course, when Yoko asked this question of Prabhupada, and Prabhupada said, this is impossible, said at death, immediately, you are separated, then she lost all interest. It was like a private invitation. There was Srila Prabhupada and his secretary, his servant Purushottam. But Trivikram and myself knew about this meeting, and we also knew the layout of the house, because we'd also been stripping paint from the walls, the wooden boards, because it was all beautiful oak paneling in the main living room, and there was French windows leading out into the garden. So what we did was, without Prabhupada's knowing, without John Lennon's knowing, we had, in the dark, gone over to the French windows, and although the curtains were drawn, they weren't completely closed. There was like a little slit, and we could see into the room. And also, by the French windows, John Lennon had put up all his recording equipment. There was an Ampex machine, because he wanted Prabhupada to hear the master tape, the master recording of this song. And Prabhupada had also been recording. He had been recording some bhajans, and these were accompanied by harmonium and tampura. So we saw the scene through the slip in the curtains, that Prabhupada came into that room and he was invited to sit down in a very large, comfortable sofa along with Purushottam, which was at the other end of the room. And Yoko was sitting on a chair next to Prabhupada, and then John said, "So I've made this recording, I'd like you to hear it." And he came over to the where the equipment was, and he started playing around with the knobs and dials. And it started to move, but then all of a sudden he couldn't get it to work. There was no sound coming out. The tape was moving, but there was no sound coming out. And we could, because we were facing him and he was facing us, although he couldn't see us because we were in pitch dark and he was in this, you know, in this bright room. We could see he was really getting frustrated because there was no sound coming out of his equipment. And after a minute or so, Prabhupada realized he was having difficulty, and he said, "So it seems you're having trouble, but I have also done some recording, and I have brought my tape recording machine, and that's working. It's a little Ure portable." And he told Purushottam to start it up, and so instead of Prabhupada having to hear this horrific song, I don't know if you've heard this song, it's a horrific song, he was spared that song, and he was able to play his music to John Lennon. So John had to retire from his equipment and sit down beside near Yoko Ono and listen. And then shortly after that, after a few minutes conversation, Prabhupada said, "So now I have to go back. I have some translation work to do." And then he had left the room. And then as he was coming round, we jumped out of the bushes and paid our obeisances to Srila Prabhupada. And Prabhupada rubbed us on our backs as we were paying our obeisances. And he went, "Jai," he said, "so, you saw?"
There was one particular morning when very few of us were actually with Prabhupada. It was here at Bhaktivedanta Manor. And there were about five of us. And for the first third or so of the walk, Prabhupada didn't speak. He was just chanting on his japa. And then he reached the top of the road where the road turns off down up towards the right, just past Round Bush. And Prabhupada asked us a few questions. He said, he first of all started explaining how the living entities, they reflect the mystic powers that Krishna has. Krishna is full of mystic powers, but the living entities, they also have mystic powers. Just like the frog. Prabhupada said, the frog has yogic powers. You bury him in the ground, he will not die. I was walking next to Prabhupada. I said, but Prabhupada, the frog, he breathes through his skin. Prabhupada said, no, he has yogic powers. It's interesting, since then I've read of frogs and toads buried in solid stone for goodness knows how many tens of thousands, perhaps even millions of years. A quarryman cracking open a stone and a live frog or a live toad comes out. So they're actually having mystic powers to be buried for so long.
I remember one story, and I just read it confirmed in Harisori's third part of his diary. There I organized the Janmashtami, and I think it was the first time that we'd arranged to have pain for some prasadam. And, you know, generally we had a big booth and there'd be prasadam distributed everywhere. But this one year I thought, well, why not make some little extra prasadam special and then charge somebody who doesn't want to take, you know, the basic rice chapati and sabji. They may want some pizzas or something, chips or something different. and we're not able to serve prasadam the whole time, so we'll keep... So anyhow, I made this arrangement for a little... Well, somebody did, but I was president, so I was feeling responsible that it... And I, later on, I was up in Prabhupada's room, and there was Darshan, Kirtan, and at the end, so Prabhupada said, any questions? And one guest quite strongly began to criticize and complain, that why you are selling prasadam? Prasadam is prasadam, it should be given away. So my heart started pounding, I panicked, you know, I'm standing at the back, and Prabhupada is looking, and he looks around, and he said, actually, and then Prabhupada said to him, I think Arisori's got the exact word for word, but basically Prabhupada said, if we don't charge you, then you'll never give anything. So I felt completely vindicated that it was okay to, you know, to sell some prasadam at the temple. In Arisori's book, Prabhupada says something that actually you are meant to give to support, but you don't give, therefore we charge you something. But otherwise you'll never give anything. So that was quite... He had to be quiet then after that. But he was... I remember the Indian gentleman. He was a particularly complaining type. He was always there, though. He always used to come regularly. So I thought I was a little nervous in case Prabhupada took issue with me that we were selling prasadam. But he accepted that that was okay.
One time we were going past Buckingham Palace. So we were very proud at that time that one boy had joined who was part of the Queen's Guards. You know, the guys who wear the big furry hats. So as we were passing the palace, we were in a taxi with Prabhupada. So we looked over and we said, Prabhupada, one of the Queen's personal guards has joined. And then Prabhupada said, oh, so what about the Queen?
George asked if he should join and move into the temple and shave up. And Prabhupada said, no. He said, what you're doing through your music is much more important. He said, you're already a devotee of Krishna. So you continue. And he was talking about some music he had written for a singer called Lakshmi Shankar, Ravi Shankar's sister. And there was one song entitled, Krishna, Where Are You? And Prabhupada listened to that recording in George's presence, and he said, this is our Gaudiya Vaishnava mood. He said, this is very correct, that we should be crying out, Krishna, where are you? We shouldn't think that we have captured Krishna, that we know who is Krishna. And he said, this is how you can serve our society the best. Another time when we went to George Harrison's house, this is after a program at Reading. Reading is a city nearby Henley. And that's where that famous photograph was taken in the grounds of George Harrison's property. We went inside the house because when we came there, we couldn't find, or Shamsundar couldn't find where George was. But Shamsundar knew the layout of the house and knew which room we should go to. So we all went there. We went to that room and waited for George. And as we were waiting, it was getting dark. And then finally, George arrived, and he came with a big bouquet of flowers and a big basket of fruit. Because you'd never come empty-handed. You'd always want to bring something for Srila Prabhupada. So he'd actually been out, you know, doing this, getting some gifts for Srila Prabhupada. And he presented these to Srila Prabhupada, and he paid full dandabats to Srila Prabhupada. And then Srila Prabhupada said, the purpose of this human form of life is to leave this world of dark and go back to the world of light. And as he was saying this, you know, the room was getting, because there was no light on, it was getting darker and darker and darker, and Prabhupada was emphasizing this point. Prabhupada would always be expert at using nature, any situation that he'd find himself in. And he's saying, this is a world of dark. He said, this world requires illumination. And the only illumination we have is from the sun and the moon. He said, without the sunshine, there would be no life. There'd be no light. And of course, when the sun sets, then we need to call upon artificial illumination, electricity, fire. So, but in the world of light, there's no need for any kind of artificiality. So this is where we all wish to live, in the world of light, not in the world of dark. So he just was constantly emphasizing this particular point. And George was very much appreciating.
And then he said, what living entity eats through his feet? Krishna, he can eat through any part of his body. Any sense can do the part function of any other. So there is a living entity who eats through his feet. Huh? He's looking around. Who? So we're all scratching our heads. None of us could figure out. And Prabhupada stopped and pointed with his stick. He said, see, the tree. He is eating through his feet. It's a very sweet little discussion with Prabhupada. It's very nice.
I remember different things on morning walks. One thing was that Prabhupada was always commenting about the state of society. And one of the things he'd noticed was these people would sleep in the parks. They'd sleep under, in the sleep bags or just on the newspaper or whatever. So Prabhupada was just explaining how karma is such that even though you have so much advancement, he said, such an advanced society, he said, but still they can't avoid karma. So Prabhupada said, you can see these people, they're still suffering. Even though they're living in a very civilized country, still they are sleeping in a vulnerable condition. And another thing that Srila Prabhupada was pointing out one morning, we were asking him about advancement. So Prabhupada very, very determinedly stopped, and then he took one step forward, and then Prabhupada pointed to his leg, and he said, when one leg is firmly fixed, then Prabhupada said, then one moves the next leg. So Prabhupada said, in that way one can make advancement. But Prabhupada said, not to run, simply falling. Falling over.
Another time we were walking and there was a patch of yellow grass, and Prabhupada, in his famous way, stopped and he pointed to this patch of yellow grass and he said, so why is this grass yellow and all the rest of the other grass is green around, all the grass around is green? Why is this grass yellow? And Gurudas tried to give some philosophical explanation. There must be some reason because the nature of the soil or because of too much rain or actually, it wasn't philosophical, it was like a practical explanation why the grass is yellow. And Prabhupada said, no, he said, this grass is yellow because it is detached from the root. He said, all plants get their nourishment from the root. And as soon as there's some detachment from the root, immediately there's difficulty. So just like we're all in difficulty in this material world because we've become detached from Krishna. As soon as we're attached to Krishna, we'll become very successful in our lives.
Well, some of the instructions I absorbed from his morning walks were two important ones, I think. One was in relation to book distributions. We had some discussion about distributing records and collecting. And Prabhupada, there was quite some discussion about that. But Prabhupada made it very, very clear at that particular time, that was about 1974 also, that if you use some paraphernalia to collect funds, that is okay, but still there must be some book given. He was not at all in favor of just collecting. He said, I'm not a beggar. I never begged anything. Whenever I took some donation, I gave some literature. So I remember that was very strong. Gyanadas and myself and a few were discussing that with him one morning. Another morning, walking through the village and around the fields here, we talked about cleanliness. And one devotee thought he was doing the right thing. He piped up and said that in the Edinburgh temple, we exterminated all of the... Because this Prabhupada was talking about, if you're not clean, then some rats and mice and things will come. So one devotee, without thinking very clearly, I don't think, just piped up and said, oh, we had all the rats and mice exterminated, killed in the Edinburgh temple. And Prabhupada turned on him quite strongly and said, you should be killed. I won't mention the devotee's name. He's a nice devotee, but he, Prabhupada was very angry that they exterminated vermin. His point was that the temple should be so spotless that nothing will, what will they come for? There's nothing to eat.
Okay, well, one time Prabhupada was very ill. And that was the time when he actually collapsed in his room. Shamsundar, it was late at night, and Shamsundar rushed in and just caught Prabhupada. But he said that Srila, you know, Prabhupada didn't fall as such, but he just sort of like, he was very weak. He called out to Shamsundar. And Shamsundar said when he went in there, and he Prabhupada kind of fell into his arms. And he said Prabhupada was incredibly light. So what we did then, we all actually stayed in bed that morning. No one got up because we didn't want to disturb Prabhupada at all. And when we got up, everyone had to be really quiet. And we had 24-hour kirtan, very nice kirtan in the temple. Anyway, about 3 days later, we were just walking on a morning walk with Prabhupada. Suddenly Prabhupada got really well again. And we're on this morning walk. And one of the devotees said to Prabhupada, he said that, Srila Prabhupada, how is it that a pure devotee, someone who's a pure devotee, how does he get sick? And Prabhupada stopped. And I always remember it because it was so loving. Prabhupada's eyes got really big. You know, like Prabhupada used to, his eyes would get very big. And he stopped and he became very emotional. And Prabhupada said, it is just like the lover. Prabhupada said, sometimes the lover, what is this? And Prabhupada went like that, what is it? Sometimes they're biting like this. And we said, oh, love bite, Prabhupada. And Prabhupada said, yes. So Prabhupada said, similarly, Krishna, he has his love bites. So sometimes he bites the devotee. And then he smiled. But it was very, you could tell it was very, you know, that it was very deep.
I asked a question about Lord Shiva. I wanted to know Lord Shiva's position. And for some reason, Prabhupada answered so strongly, almost in anger, that I would bring up Lord Shiva's name. And I was told later on the reason that he had replied so strongly was because this was quite a regular question that came up amongst hippies because of the drug culture, because of what Prabhupada has seen in New York and San Francisco, and how many young people were smoking chillums and saying this is Shiv Prashad or whatever, you know, this is. And so Prabhupada very strongly said, he is not God. He is like chief of police. He is designated authority. He said, he is not the supreme authority. Krishna is like this, so he was. He was really giving me the sauce when I brought up the question about Lord Shiva. That's all also stuck in my mind since then. Another time we were walking close to a field where there were some donkeys and some horses, and Kulashikar started shouting out, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, really loudly to try and draw the attention of the animals in the field. And Prabhupada said, they don't have the ears to hear. They cannot appreciate, even you chant at the top of your voice, they cannot appreciate, they don't have the proper ears to hear. And Kulashikar said, but Lord Chaitanya, he went through the Dandakaranya forest and he was chanting to all the animals, he said. And then Prabhupada smiled and said, well, if you chant loud enough, they may hear something.
There's a story, when Prabhupada was walking around the lake one time, this was before the lake here at Bhaktivedanta Manor was cleared. Pointing from the far side of the lake, Prabhupada indicated a big mound of brambles and nettles and weeds. And Prabhupada said, this should be cleared. So over the next week it was cleared, and underneath this big pile of weeds and overgrown vegetation, we found a landing stage. It wasn't apparent. And later that summer, after it had been repaired and rebuilt, Srila Prabhupada sat down there by the side of the lake, looking at the lake, and he said, we should build an island and have a temple of Mahavishnu in the middle of the lake. And he described, as a child, some of the temples which were surrounded by water in the ghats, they'd have kirtan from boats. So he said, you should also do of kirtan from the boats around the temple in the middle of the lake. Of course, the council being as restrictive as they are, we couldn't even get permission to put a fountain in the middle of the lake, what to speak of a temple. Prabhupada, that time Prabhupada was reminiscing about his childhood, particularly his pastime of having kirtan in, the boat, in boats.
I remember one time that we were having prasadam. Prabhupada was taking prasadam in his room, and Jamuna was cooking. It was Malati and Jamuna. I know that Malati was running up and down because Prabhupada liked his puris when they popped, so they had to be hot. So I remember there was this whole kind of shuffling up and down the stairs with these hot puris. So I was kind of fascinated, so I popped my head around the corner. And it was Malati. Malati was saying to Prabhupada, she was saying to Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada, how many puris can you eat? You know? And because she brought, I don't know how many puris she brought to Prabhupada, she brought him a lot of puris. And Prabhupada was as she would bring the puris, Prabhupada was respecting the prasadam. And so anyway, when she came to like this final puri, she was thinking, how many more times can I go up and down? So she said to Prabhupada, how many puris can you eat? And Prabhupada just looked up and said, more than you can make, like that. And I remember his eyes got really big, and he just laughed. And I remember looking at it, it was like a coward boy. Somehow Prabhupada at that time, he was just so, you know, like he was very ecstatic. He was kind of hitting himself on his knee, and he said, more than you can make.
There was one incident, again, this is to do with the town of Reading. There was a Mr. Prajapati, and this was actually the same, as far as I can recall, the same evening after we left John Lennon's estate. I mean, sorry, George Harrison's Friar Park in Henley. We went to this Mr. Prajapati's house, and the idea was that Prabhupada would take some milk and maybe some halva and a little bit of puri, and then we'd go back to Berry Place. But when we got there, and all the other devotees were already there, because there was only a few of us actually went to George Harrison's house that evening. Mr. Prajapati was, and his wife, were very expert in serving prasadam. So he asked Srila Prabhupada what he would like, and Prabhupada said, I'll take a little milk. And then Mr. Prajapati said, would you like something with the milk? He said, so Prabhupada said, you have prepared something? He said, yes. We have a little, if you like, some sabji and some puri and some halva. So Prabhupada said, all right, because Prabhupada actually liked to take especially halva and puris with his milk here in the UK. But as Prabhupada was being served, they were bringing in other preparations as well. And so Prabhupada was saying, oh, what is this? This looks nice. And he would take a little bit of this, and then something else would come, and then something else would come. And all of a sudden, there was about 15 or 20 different preparations in front of Prabhupada. And Prabhupada said, oh, you have tricked me. And Mr. Prajapati said, yes. He said, what could we do? We felt so honored you were coming to our house. We cooked a huge feast. And Prabhupada said, but what about for everyone here? And Mr. Prajapati said, yes, no, we've cooked sufficient quantity to feed everybody. And he said, so Srila Prabhupada said, all right, so everybody should eat too. So we all sat down, and this is like 11 o'clock at night, 11:30 at night. And we all took this massive feast. And next morning, Srila Prabhupada wanted to go into, you know, he didn't leave to go to the very place. He stayed in Mr. Prajapati's house. And we stayed in somebody else's house. And next morning we had to be up at 4 o'clock in the morning because Prabhupada wanted to go back to have darshan of Radha Landaneshwara. And that, I remember, it was very difficult for all of us to get up after staying up so late and eating so much.
So next time Prabhupada visited, many devotees had gone to the airport, and I felt, well, I'll stay here and I'll make sure that everything's nice here for the arrival. I won't go this time. And so I did that, but while I was organizing everything, I went and made a fruit offering for Prabhupada. And when he arrived, the devotees all came after the greeting. They all came up into his room. And I came in quite quickly after with this nice silver plate of all these different fruits that I prepared. And there's a little room in front of the table, so I offered the prasadam to Prabhupada Boga at that time and then paid my obeisances. And as I was on the floor, Malati piped up, Srila Prabhupada, Bhaja Hari has taken a wife since you were here last. And of course, I was struggling for 2 years to remain brahmachari, and in my mind at that time I'd fallen down, I'd got married. You know how we used to sometimes think that getting married was a step backwards in spiritual life and all that paranoia and things. So I'm very, I'm thinking, oh Malati, you know why, give us a break. But she said it with so much enthusiasm and joy that everyone said jai, and as I looked up, all embarrassed, Srila Prabhupada was looking at me and he smiled and he said, that's all right. One wife, that is brahmachari life. So I felt again. Prabhupada was always encouraging, you know.
Anyway, this day, it was a very different circumstance, and I tried as best I could to concentrate on my service, which was to start off with massaging Prabhupada's head. And as I was massaging Prabhupada's head, Purushottam was coming in and out. Generally speaking, it would only be Prabhupada and the devotee who would be massaging him, but Purushottam was there too. And Prabhupada would ask, what is this? What is happening to Purushottam? Because he was in charge of the television. And he was giving some commentary, some running commentary of what was going on. And when the shot actually came of them landing on the moon and coming out, so Prabhupada asked to Purushottam, so what are you seeing? And Purushottam said, well, they have landed on the moon and it looks like they're in a very arid area. Looks like desert. And there's little pebbles and it's very dusty. And Prabhupada said, oh, there are no buildings. There are no people. There are no gardens. And Purushottam said, no, Prabhupada, this is the moon. And he was a little disturbed that Prabhupada is asking these questions, as if Prabhupada didn't know what the moon looked like. And so Prabhupada concluded, he said, then this is not the moon. He said, according to Vedic astronomy, the moon is an upper heavenly planet full of a very advanced civilization, full of buildings and parks and lakes, a very beautiful place, full of all varieties of life. He said, this is not the moon. This is my conclusion from what you're saying to me. And Purushottam got into a really heated discussion and took the side of the scientists. And it was during this moment that Prabhupada went like this, and he wanted me to come and sit in front of him. And I thought, because Prabhupada suspected that I was watching television, but then his hands came on my head and I was sitting higher up than Prabhupada, so his hands were up like this and he were massaging my head. And he said, like this, you do like this. And so he did this twice. And then the third time when I went back, I was massaging, and Prabhupada says, still you're not getting it right. And I said, but Srila Prabhupada, I promise you, I'm not looking at the television. I'm not. I'm just concentrating. And then Prabhupada chuckled and said, that's all right. But also, at that same moment, because we were close to the door, to the hall, and the door was just slightly open, there was just like a little chink, and Prabhupada looked through the crack in the door, and he saw that Malati had just taken some milk bottles from the little hatch by the main front door to the flat, and she'd put these dirty milk bottles on the same little table that the offering that she had gone to great pain and trouble to prepare for Prabhupada's deities. And she had put these dirty bottles on there. And according to, of course, this is putting something very suchi with something very muchi. And Prabhupada saw this just out of the corner of his eye. It wasn't like he was looking through the door all the time. He was looking at the television. He was talking to Brishnam. He was concerned about my consciousness, that I was getting absorbed in the discussion, and I wasn't really there for the discussion. I was there to massage Prabhupada. And at the same time, Malati had messed up an offering. And so then he called Malati in a very angry mood. And again, generally speaking, when Prabhupada is taking a massage, he doesn't call on any ladies to come to see him. But there was tremendous urgency there, and anger. And Malati flew in through the door, paid her obeisances, and she was clutching the top of her sari, keeping it over her head. And, "What's happened, Srila Prabhupada?" He says, "Can't you see? Can't you learn? I have taught you so many things. Can't you learn? When are you going to like this?" He was, and she didn't know what she had done. She did not know what Prabhupada was talking about. So she was getting more and more confused. And she was getting really disturbed. And then Prabhupada had to point out what she had done. And then she started to cry. And then she ran out and she took the bottles away.
Prabhupada also was greeting at the deities when he first arrived. So he said, "Be very careful." He said, "Do not become proud." He said, "You are dealing with Radha and Krishna. Don't be proud. Then everything will be spoiled." And then another time, one guest asked Prabhupada, he says, "Why does Krishna have peacock feather?" You know, and I remember I was thinking, well, Prabhupada's going to give some far-out esoteric reason, you know, that peacocks are this, and therefore he goes there. And Prabhupada just turned around and said, "Because he likes to." You know, it's the way Prabhupada said it. It was just so, it was so simple. And actually, Prabhupada said on another occasion also, he said that he was sitting on the Vyasa sign and he said, "This Krishna consciousness, it is so simple, you will miss it." He said, "It is so simple, you will miss it." And I always remember that because it was just so simple, you know, what he was saying. And yet it was so deep. Because Prabhupada said, "This Krishna consciousness is so simple, you will miss it."
There was an ecumenical meeting. Shamsundar had arranged for a few clergy to come and meet Srila Prabhupada. It was a sunny afternoon, so we met on the lawn. Prabhupada was sitting down on the grass. And there were three chairs put out for some of the clergy who aren't accustomed to sitting cross-legged on the grass. Three nuns arrived, and as they were sitting down, they respectfully said to Prabhupada, said, "So, you are the spiritual master of the Hare Krishna movement?" And Prabhupada said, "No, I am the spiritual servant." Very quiet. I don't even know if they heard him. But Prabhupada's vision of himself was very humble.
When this Anglican nun came to meet Srila Prabhupada, and she was wearing what we generally recognize as a nun's habit, although she wasn't a Catholic nun, she was an Anglican nun. And she kept her rosary just like a Catholic nun, and Prabhupada asked her what she chanted on, what was the prayer that she chanted. And she said, "Well, my prayer is, my dear Lord Jesus Christ, please have mercy on me." And she says, "I say this with all sincerity on every beat before I do my work." And Prabhupada said, "Yes." He said, this is a very good prayer." He said, "This prayer, my dear Lord Jesus Christ, please have mercy upon me. You should go on, continue praying like this, and certainly Lord Jesus Christ will bestow his mercy upon you."
So there were another time also went to see the Indian ambassador with Prabhupada. That was a very nice occasion, and we didn't have a car at the time. Actually, the temple was very poor, so we went to see the Indian ambassador, and I had to announce amongst the guests. I said, "Has anyone got a car we could use?" There was a few guests there, so one hippie said, "I've got one. And your Swami can use it." And we looked outside, and it was a beetle, but it was all flowers on it. It was like a really, it was a ridiculous looking car, you know. And I thought, boy, Prabhupada, how can we put Prabhupada in this? But we had to go for the meeting. So we got in the car with Srila Prabhupada, Shamsundar, myself, and there was Prabhupada, and this hippie driving. So we went off down to the Indian Embassy. And one of the things I remember about the meeting was when we got to see the Indian ambassador, Prabhupada just sat there and he was so relaxed. He was so transcendental. And at the same time, he was just talking about Srila Rupa Goswami. So I knew Prabhupada had come for some intention. So I was thinking, I didn't exactly know why he'd come. Later on I found out he'd come to get 5-year visas for his missionary visas for his devotees in India and America, the American devotees particularly. And so he was talking about Srila Rupa Goswami and the Goswamis, and then he showed him nectar devotion, he gave him nectar devotion, and for about half an hour Prabhupada just talked about the Goswamis. And then at the end of it, so the gentleman was so kind of purified, the Indian ambassador, so then he started talking to him in a very personal way. He called him by his first name. He said, Abhay Pant is now. Abu Pant or something. And he said, "So Abu, last time I was here, you said, Swamiji, whatever you want, I will do, you know, if I can help you." He said, "So now I have one request." And by that time, they were in such nice relationship that he couldn't refuse. You know, Prabhupada completely melted him. And he wanted him to get in touch with Indira Gandhi. And he wanted him to arrange for the 5-year visas. So, as I remember it, he went off at that time, and the Indian ambassador tried to, he was going to contact through Delhi, the Indira Gandhi. And but it was just such an amazing way that Prabhupada had actually softened him by talking about the Goswamis and the philosophy. So, you know, it fascinated me how he dealt with that particular person, because there was no kind of business-like stuff. It was just that Prabhupada was, you could see, he was an ambassador from the Goswamis, and he was meeting the Indian ambassador, and he did it on his grounds. He didn't do it on their grounds. He didn't behave like a diplomat or in any way try to conform to their idea of negotiations. And that really kind of struck on me.
Another nice story. One time Prabhupada was here and he wasn't very well, as I remember, but still he wanted to go and visit Radhalandaneshwara. It must have been 73 or 4. It was earlier on. So we arranged the vehicle. I think it was the only time I ever drove Srila Prabhupada in the car. So we drove down to Berry Place, and many devotees were there, and after greeting the deities, Prabhupada sat on his Vyasasan, and he said, "There's a song about Radharani, you know?" And Yogeshwara was there, and he tried to sing the song. Radhe Jaya Jaya Madhava Daite. But he got about that far, and it was obvious he didn't know any more words, so he was trying to sing, and Prabhupada was sitting smiling. And so Prabhupada took over and began to sing. Radhe Jaya Jaya Madhava. And so he sang, and we were trying to follow with him because we'd not heard it before. Or even if we had, we didn't really know it very well. And then Kirtan, he went into Kirtan, Hare Krishna Kirtan, and I remember very clearly this particular day. So that after he rose from the Vyasasana, he was going to leave the temple, and devotees made way for Prabhupada, and I just ducked out first through the door because I wanted to put his slippers on. So as I got out the door, Prabhupada came into the doorway, and at Berry Place it was not a very big doorway, it was just big enough for one person or maybe two to go through together. So Prabhupada was standing in the doorway and all the devotees were behind him chanting and dancing and leaping in ecstasy. I mean, it really was a blissful kirtan. And as Prabhupada got to the door, Yogeshwara shouted out, "Srila Prabhupada, you are Radharani's mercy personified." And all the devotees went, "Jai." And I was just at that moment putting Srila Prabhupada's slippers on. And I thought, I'm going to look up and see how he reacts to that. Yeah, So I looked up, and as I looked up, Prabhupada looked down at me, and I won't try to imitate him, but I'm trying to feel how he said it, but he said, Radharani's mercy contaminated. I was the only one that, yeah, that I know, because there was a full kirtan behind him. So I was just spent the last 20 years trying to meditate on, understand Prabhupada's humility to say that, but then I also wonder sometimes whether he was talking to me, that I'm touching your his feet, and now I'm Radharani's mercy contaminated. So there's different ways to look at everything, as we know. I try to see both sides of that one.
Another time when I was present with Prabhupada and he was speaking with a cardinal in Rome, Cardinal Pignedoli. This cardinal happened to be also the Bishop of Bombay, and he had met the devotees in Bombay. So he kept saying to Prabhupada, he said, what you're doing and what we are doing is just the same. Just the same thing. And then Prabhupada said, yes, but we have our book, Bhagavad Gita, and he presented Prabhupada a copy. Prabhupada presented a copy to Cardinal Pignedoli. You should read this, because this will give you more understanding on how to surrender oneself to God. Srila Prabhupada made a comment to me when I was in Rome that Italians are religious by nature and they want the blessings of God. You see how many flock to St. Peter's Square whenever the Pope is there, you know, and giving his talk. He said they want the blessings of God, but they don't know how to get those blessings. He said we should teach them how to become qualified for the blessings of God. So he said this is the most important ingredient that's missing within the Catholic teachings, is how to become qualified.
Then what happened was that we did a program. We had a big program in Glasgow. And this was far out, because actually Prabhupada had... that morning we went to the program, he hadn't eaten. He had a bit of breakfast. But what I didn't realize was I had to go early and arrange the setup. And Prabhupada came over by train. And in the train he met this very nice Indian man. He really liked the journey. He was telling us afterwards. And anyway, what happened was, though, I don't think they brought him any prasadam. So he must have left about noontime, or maybe 1 o'clock. So between that, right up until the evening time, he hadn't practically eaten, but he never complained once. So anyway, we got to the hall and we had this program, and it was a far out program, because the hall was packed. I don't know how, what, you know, in those days it was a big hall. I think there was at least 500 people in there. It was 400 or 500 people, and they were like, they loved Prabhupada. Somehow the Scottish took a real liking to Prabhupada. So we had this big Vyasa sign on the stage, and we had a massive kirtan. Hansa Dutta was leading and everything. It was a real ecstatic kirtan. And these street urchins, there was these kids that had come in off the street, because we let anyone in, and they were dancing like anything, and Prabhupada was really encouraging them. There was a whole rapport going on between them and Prabhupada. And I thought that was far out, because most of the time we were trying to get them out. And Prabhupada you could see Prabhupada didn't like that the devotees were trying to pull them away, so I stopped it. But anyway, so Prabhupada did this amazing lecture. It's actually, I've heard it many times since. And he lectured from the Bhagavad Gita. And what happened was, at the end of the lecture, so Prabhupada said, so, are there any questions? And then one guy stood up and he started to say, you know, basically what he was trying to say was that I am God. But he, first of all, he started waffling some stuff, and then he came to the point. He said, actually, he said, we're all God. And Prabhupada wasn't saying a word. Prabhupada was just letting him speak. Now, he was speaking, and the object was he was in person, but he was saying, we're all God, it's all one. And then suddenly he ran out of words. And Prabhupada was just sitting there. Prabhupada looked very, very grave, but like a lion. He was just sitting there like a lion. And suddenly there was this complete silence, because the guy ran out of words. And so there was just this guy looking at Prabhupada. He was right at the front of the audience, looking straight up at Prabhupada, and Prabhupada was looking straight at him. And then Prabhupada said, you are not God. You are dog! And he said it in such an amazing way that the guy practically fell back on his seat. The Shakti, and the guy just fell back. The whole audience stood up and clapped and cheered and whistled. It was like Celtic had just scored a goal in World Cup or something. I mean, it was an amazing reaction. Everyone just clapped and cheered and everything. And I could see, I was looking at Prabhupada, and Prabhupada actually, he was shocked at the reaction. They just all completely backed up Prabhupada. And what happened was that after the program, we took Prabhupada to the back, and all we had was oranges. The feast, we were so poor, that the feast was oranges. I mean, you can imagine that for the public. But even then, so we get Prabhupada about, we give him 5 oranges, and then we give him another 5. I think he ate about 10 oranges. Now what happened was that when Prabhupada was leaving the hall, I can swear on this till the day I die, Prabhupada was intoxicated. It was like he was in complete ecstasy. He was staggering down the hall. Now, I was looking at Prabhupada. I was holding the door. And it was only Prabhupada and me. And his servant was coming behind. And I was just looking at Prabhupada, and Prabhupada had this beam that was like incredible. He was just intoxicated. And you could tell it was like this. I've never seen Prabhupada like that before. And when Prabhupada got to the door, I was holding the door, but I was one step below him. And he just put both his hands on my head. And he started rubbing my head. And I was just standing there, and this Prabhupada rubbing my head. And I just kind of like, I couldn't believe it. I said, what is going on? And Prabhupada was rubbing my head in a very, very gentle way. He said, I am very pleased with what you have done. He said, now you've preached this Krishna conscious all over Scotland. It was just such a beautiful way. It was like, you know, Prabhupada, you know, it's hard to explain it, because it was just one of those moments that you'll never see again.
Another time I was at Berry Place, before I was asked to be in charge at the manor, I was for some short period trying to organize Berry Place. At that time I was approached by a senior devotee who wanted to complain to Prabhupada about the GBC, and he didn't, Shamsunda, who was Shamsunda at the time. At that time Shamsunda was obviously having spiritual difficulties, and at least from the external point of view, he wasn't coming to Mangalati. It was pretty clear he wasn't chanting his rounds. He was out in the evenings. There wasn't much money, but he wanted to rent a car. And so he had this car, and I could have, you know, the devotees were struggling to maintain themselves. And so there was some agitation at Shamsunda's behavior. So devotees were talking, but nobody would bring it to Srila Prabhupada's attention directly. So a particular devotee, senior devotee at the time, approached me and said, you come to Prabhupada with me, because I agreed, well, Prabhupada at least should know that this is going on. If he doesn't know, how can, you know, or maybe he knows. But I went along with it anyway. So I went in with this devotee, and actually, it was Ribhatanandan Swami. I was his, and because I had been his secretary, his servant, he took my support to go into Prabhupada with him. And we went in and paid our obeisances, and within a minute or two, Srila Prabhupada had understood our purpose. And he looked at me in disgust, actually. He was not happy that I'd come to complain. And when he realized that we were there just to complain about Shamsunda, he looked at Ribhatananda and he said, tell him to leave. Oh, no, sorry, excuse me. First of all, he looked at me and he said, you should not criticize the superior Vaishnavas. Then, without talking to me anymore, he looked at Ribhatananda and smiled and said, you tell him to leave. So I crawled out on my stomach, practically. I'd gone there to complain about Shamsunda and his inappropriate behavior as the GBC, and not knowing anything about Prabhupada's relationship with Shamsunda, how I'd taken this impertinent position, I realized after, and gone in to complain about one of his dear disciples. And that was all Prabhupada said. Do not criticize the superior Vaishnava. And then he looked at his other senior devotee and said, you tell him to leave. I'm not even going to tell him to leave.
Through Jagpataka Maharaj, we'd all been invited to Srila Maharaj's mutt over in Navadvip. And so we all went. We thought this was part of the program, that we were going to meet some of Prabhupada's godbrothers. And so they had arranged a whole big program over in Srila Maharaj's mutt, along with prasadam. And there was talks by Srila Maharaj, there was talks by different of my sannyasi godbrothers. And we were over there for a few hours, and then we all came back, and Prabhupada was actually waiting at the gate. And he called for Jai Pataka Maharaj. And he said, "So where have you all been?" And Jai Pataka Maharaj said, "We went over to Sridhar Maharaj's mat for a program." He said, "You didn't tell me?" He's not informed Prabhupada about this program. Prabhupada got really upset. So he called Jai Pataka Maharaj up to his room and he told him, he said, this is not right. He said, all these local Bengalis in Navadvip are thinking that all your foreigners have come due to the preaching effort of Sridhar Maharaj. He said, he never preached in the West. I preached in the West. You have all come because of me. But he is getting all the publicity. He said, you have to be very careful how you deal with my god brothers. So they will take full advantage. They will take all the credit. But actually they don't deserve that credit. So he, in 74, he gave this warning that we shouldn't give the credit to his god brothers for our presence in India.
Okay, so what happened was that Prabhupada called me back into the room, and I was kind of fascinated then, because now I'm in the room with Prabhupada, and Prabhupada's going to have a shave. So I was drying myself off, and Prabhupada was in the mirror with this, and he'd soaked up, and he had this, Nanda Kumar was standing behind him with a towel and some stuff. And now the only thing you have to check is Nanda Kumar, because that I can't focus in on. I don't think, it might have been Shruti Kirti, but I don't think so. You know, it's one of those things, because with Prabhupada, I always remember, you know, kind of servants, but there were always Nanda Kumar or Shruti Kirti or something like that. So I'm pretty sure it was Nanda Kumar. But anyway, Prabhupada's trying to use the razor. So I could see Prabhupada was disturbed, and I was fascinated the way Prabhupada was so angelic. He was like going like this. So Prabhupada was looking, so he turned to Nanda Kumar and said, "This is Gillette?" First of all, he was holding the razor in his hand like that, and he said, and then he looked at Nanda Kumar and said, and he was pointing to the dial, because Prabhupada has a razor with a dial on it, and he adjusts it, and he said, "There's no dial? Not here?" Like that. You know how Prabhupada would question. He said, "Dial?" And then Nanda Kumar said, "No, that one, that's not your regular razor, Prabhupada, it doesn't have a dial." And Prabhupada said, "Is it?" Then Prabhupada said, "It is Gillette?" And then Nanda Kumar said, "No, it's not Gillette." Prabhupada said, "Simply bogus." And the way it was like unbelievable. It was like he'd rejected, you know, like someone who rejects Mayavadi philosophy. Prabhupada just said, "Simply bogus." And he said it in such a wonderful way. And the razor just sort of floated. He didn't throw it, but there was a shelf there. And it just landed on the shelf. But Prabhupada just went, "Simply bogus."
And when Prabhupada was in Rome, he commented by looking at the architecture that the Vedic civilization has spread up to Rome. Just by looking at the old Roman wall and some other Roman ruins, he said that style of architecture is to be found within the Vedic civilization. And that's also where Srila Prabhupada wanted a book to be written, entitled "How Krishna Consciousness Can Solve All the Problems of the World." And every morning he would ask us to bring all kinds of problems to him, and he would solve them through Krishna consciousness. And in 74 there was a problem with there was a big oil embargo going on. So there was a major petroleum crisis, and oil had gone from $4 a barrel up to $40 or something, some huge leap. Prabhupada said, "This can be solved very easily." He said, "Everyone should stop using motor cars and go by foot or by horse or by cart." He said, "This motor car society won't last very long." He said that in human society, the mode of travel, the most normal mode of travel, is by horse, or by cart, by camel, and by elephant. He said that mode of transport has been around since time immemorial. He said only in Kali Yuga do we have this motor car, and he said this motor car society will not last very long. to when the petrol dries up, when the oil dries up, what use are your motor cars? He said, I never intended the temples to be for householders. He said that temples are meant for brahmacharis and sannyasis. Householders are meant to live outside. He said, so I'm giving you a house to live. And he said, and while you're over there, you should also work. He said, householders should live outside and they should work outside also. So this is how the mukut business started up, under Prabhupada's personal care and attention. He even took me to Aligarh, because there's so much brass making goes on, especially of the unfinished, unrefined casting of the deities. And Prabhupada wanted me to start up a business, manufacturing not only crowns and dresses for the deities as a means of livelihood for maintaining myself over in that house. He gave me a house to myself, that Taparia house, which of course is now the Goshala. I developed that whole thing through the income from the business over the years. But he also wanted me to distribute Gornitai deities in a massive scale. He said, this is the way we can actually spread the cultural aspect of Krishna consciousness, is through worship of Gornitai. He said that these Gornitai deities should be sold along with the books as Sankirtan paraphernalia and be sold as Hare Krishna dolls. He said, in the world, people are keeping so many different kinds of dolls. They're keeping Russian dolls, they're keeping Spanish dolls, Mexican dolls, French dolls, Dutch dolls. He said, they can also keep Hare Krishna dolls. And he said, Gornitai are so merciful, they can enter into the home of a meat eater and not take offense. So he said, we are distributing book Bhagavat, and we can also distribute person Bhagavat. He said, if every temple takes minimum 10 pairs of these Hare Krishna dolls a month, we have 120 temples. He said, that's 1,200 pairs of Gornitai every month. He said, that is good business. You should learn how to do this. You should push it like anything, which I tried to do, but no one is interested. And he said, when they're sold on the street, this is directly from Srila Prabhupada, he said that when the devotee sells the book and then he says, by the way, we've got these Hare Krishna dolls, why don't you take them home as well? And so the person in the street will say, well, what are they? He said, well, these are special dolls. If you look after them nicely, they will fulfill all of your desires. So the person may take them, you know, whatever the price is, and go back and put them in his display cabinet or on his shelf or whatever. And he himself may not be particularly interested to know how to fulfill his desires. But he'll be questioned by his family members. Well, we recognize these dolls, but what are these little brass guys there? Who are they? Oh, these are Hare Krishna dolls, and I was told if I look after them nicely, they'll fulfill all my desires. And Prabhupada said, so then at least one member of the family eventually will want to know, how can I fulfill all my desires? How do I do this? What do I do? And that the only place he can go is back to the devotees. And the devotees will then teach them how to offer with love and devotion a little fruit, a flower, some water. And later on, as they get more devotional, they can also be introduced to Arctic paraphernalia, and then changing the dresses and so on. So this was another big vision of Srila Prabhupada.
He was always trying to give Krishna to somebody, whether it was in the form of a sweet, whether it was in some dialogue, whether it was in the form of his books, whether it was in the form of the deities, whether it was in the form of his disciples, giving you their association. He was always trying to create a situation where people would advance in Krishna consciousness. And, you know, that's the greatest compassion. I'm constantly aware of people suffering. Even they think they're happy. He could see beyond that. He understood everything. And he knew the only business in life was to give Krishna consciousness to other people. And I like to think he instilled a little of that in me. That morning he said that we are their good fortune, that you can also give this to people. Not, he didn't say, I am their good fortune, I have come from India to give this knowledge. No, we are their good fortune. So that's also the humility. I mean, Prabhupada's humility and compassion.
Krishna Kirtana Ganana Tanapano Premamritam Manidhi Dhira Dhira Jana Priyau priya karavu.